evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, July the 10th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello.
Here.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Here.
Councilmember Fellows.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold.
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Here. Item 3 on our agenda is our flag salute. We're pleased to have Stephen Champo here from VFW, who will lead us in the flag salute. And if you would please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor Richard Sharn, retired Pastor Richard Sharn, is here to conduct that for us.
Present arms. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Two.
This moment to just pause and praise you for our nation under God. We're thankful for freedom, for liberty, for justice, for a great and beautiful country. We thank you for our leaders, locally and nationally, and for all those past and present who have and are defending our nation and giving hope to others. Protect them by thy might, great God, our King. We thank you for the flag of the United States of America, and we give you praise. We are prosperous. Help us to be generous. We are blessed. Make us a blessing. May our focus be on the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus, who proclaimed, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." We ask for wisdom this evening for our city council in every decision that they make. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. Okay, Steve, what's happening at VFW?
Well, the two big events for us, the bigger events, are Memorial Day and Veterans Day. I can report to you that for Memorial Day this year, we decorated 1,834 graves in the Arroyo Grande Cemetery. Sadly, we now have IEF and EOF, Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom veterans now in that cemetery. One highlight, and you may or may not be aware of this, but we have a Medal of Honor winner buried in our cemetery. He was from the Civil War, fought for the Union. And if you were going down past the cemetery along the Halcyon side, and you see there's one grave that has its own flagpole, and he has his own flag, and it was Elmer Smith. But we do have a Medal of Honor winner in that cemetery. Our next big event coming up will be Veterans Day. We have a coalition, so we don't handle it every year. The Five Cities Veterans of Foreign Wars, of which I'm a part, is in the coalition with the Napomo VFW Post and the American Legion in Arroyo Grande here, Post 136. Post 136
this evening, and I would invite our Parks and Recreation Director, Doug Perrin, to meet me at the podium. We have an honorary proclamation this evening that I'm going to read and then present to Doug. This is an honorary proclamation proclaiming July as Parks and Recreation Month, whereas the parks and recreation profession in California creates community through people, parks, and programs, and whereas our parks help to preserve and protect the natural and cultural resources of California, and whereas Parks and Recreation Services support more productive workforces, enhance the desirability of locations for businesses and families, and stimulate tourism revenues to increase a total community development model. And whereas Parks and Recreation strengthens community image and sense of place and increases cultural unity. And whereas Parks and Recreation promotes health and wellness and reduces healthcare costs. And whereas Parks and Recreation fosters human development, helping young people develop and grow into healthy adults, and helping adults to continue to live longer. And whereas hundreds of children, adults, and seniors benefit from the wide range of services, facilities, and programs provided by the City of Arroyo Grande Recreation and Facilities Department. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby urge all residents to enjoy and recognize the programs offered by the City Parks and Recreation Department and recognize July as Parks and Recreation Month. Doug, it's a pleasure to present this to you, and we'd like you to say a few words, if you would.
Oops. Oh, no, I broke it.
Unless you broke it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I prepared a lengthy speech, but my coworkers in the back said I better be brief. Angie, that's for you. I'd like to thank the council for their continued support of the Parks and Recreation Department. We take a great deal of pride in our programs and our facilities, and I appreciate your recognition of the value of Parks and Recreation in our community. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, the next item on the agenda is 9A, our first public hearing. I'm sorry. I'm in a rush to get out of here. That must be it. On items not published on the agenda, we would ask that you abide by the three-minute rule and please address the council as a whole. Once again, any items that you would like to address, make observations, recommendations, again, issues and agenda items not on this evening's agenda. Anyone?
I'll be the first.
Good evening, Bob.
Bob Lund, reside at 1202 Linda Drive. Members of the council, city staff, members of the audience. I don't know if you read the Tribune this morning, but in the local section, they talk about the village upgrade proposal unveiled. And we've been working as part of the Village Association, of which I'm president, for upgrading and improving the village for a long time. And this is a very, very significant event. And I just wanted to share with the council that I have talked to a lot of the businessmen in the village, and the plans for the village upgrade are really exciting. The planting of trees, the furniture on the street, bulb outs, everybody I've talked to so far is in full agreement and support of this whole concept. We haven't seen the final plans yet from the RRM design group, but we're definitely looking forward to it because, again, it's an exciting project. Thank you.
Good. Thank you for your comments, Bob. Anyone else? Again, items not on this evening's agenda. Going once, going twice. Okay. We'll close community comments and suggestions. Might be a fitting time. Councilmember Costello just handed me a little note that said today is Arroyo Grande's 96th birthday. So happy birthday to us. July 10th, 1911. All right, that takes us to item 8, our consent agenda. And this evening, is that it? Two items?
That's it.
We normally have a page and a half of consent items. We have two this evening, 8A and 8B. This is an opportunity before we get into the motion on the consent items. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward. If any of you would like to address items 8A or B on your agenda, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. For approval of consent items 8A and B.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Discussion? I don't think we have anything in there to read tonight.
Not tonight, sir.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Okay, now we'll get into the agenda items. And I think one of the reasons why I was jumping so quickly to our regular agenda was that we want to take one item out of order this evening. We're going to take 11A first. And go ahead and dispense with that before we get into our public hearings. So, Steve, why don't we go ahead with 11A?
Thank you. Mr. Mayor and members of the council, staff has just recently completed a very extensive selection and recruitment process for the police chief position, and we're very pleased with how well the process has gone. In fact, I'd like to take this opportunity to publicly recognize Albert Beatty, Dave Sanchez, John Allen, and Steve Andrews, who all played a role in providing input and participating in the process on behalf of the police department staff. As you know, we began the process by hiring Bob Murray and Associates to perform the recruitment phase of the process, which included education and outreach and advertising. And we received 48 applications from all over the country. They were reviewed by a pre-screening committee, which narrowed those applications down to the top eight. Those went through a very rigorous interview process with three separate panels, including city managers, police chiefs, police department staff, and a department director representative. They also provided a sample staff report and presentation. I then interviewed the top finalists, and then we performed a very extensive background investigation process. As pleased as I was with the process, I'm even more pleased with the outcome of the process. I think I can speak for the council and myself when I say that we were all extremely sad when Chief Isles announced that he was needing to retire to address some family medical issues outside the area. However, I also believe we were able to turn a negative in Pennsylvania. Prior to that, he served as the chief in Breckenridge, Colorado, and also served in various capacities with the Arapaho County Sheriff's Department in Colorado, the San Diego Sheriff's Department, and the Los Angeles Police Department. He also has a bachelor's degree in public administration and is a graduate of Northwestern University School of Police Staff and Command and the University of Colorado Western Police Institute School of Law Enforcement Management and Leadership. You see where I need to read that part. If approved, his employment will be effective August 27th. And Steve is here this evening if the City Council has any questions of him. If not, if approved after, I would recommend the mayor ask him to come to the podium so we can formally introduce him to the community. And at this time, it's my pleasure to present to the council for consideration the confirmation of my appointment of Steve Annibale as our next police chief.
Okay, thank you. Well, once again, this is not a public hearing. This is obviously a very key issue for the city of Arroyo Grande, a very important one. We're very pleased with the outcome of the recruitment effort that Steve indicated. We would like to give any member of the audience an opportunity, though, to come forth on 11A, as is our practice. If anyone would like to do so, this is your opportunity. Okay. Seeing none, then let's see. Steve, would you like to come up and say a few words?
Sure. Well, first, I have to say, after hearing that whole process, I'm very excited to be here. I want to thank the mayor and the council, of course, and Steve for all the support and help they've given me up till now to get to this point. It's been a very gratifying process, a challenging one, but I'm really pleased to be here. I also am very excited about the opportunity to work with many of the people at the back of the room here and, of course, the community here also. So we're looking forward to getting settled in. We have a lot of moving ahead of us, but we're really glad to be coming back home to California.
Thank you, Steve. All right, we'll bring this back to the council. Why don't we start with Councilmember Guthrie?
Well, I do want to welcome you to our community, and I certainly am supportive of this going forward, and I think staff's done a great job in this research, so thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
Actually, the search process, pardon me, the process was much more extensive than our city manager mentioned. Thankfully, he abbreviated it. But to come out on top of that, Mr. Annibale really is an amazing guy. I'm very pleased with the fact that he's going to be our police chief.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's not much I can add to what everybody else has said. I'm very excited to have Steve join our department, and I think we have a lot of great things to look forward to. Thank you.
Okay, good. We understand that there will be a more formal ceremony at some point in the near future. I think probably sometime in August. Is that correct?
August 28th, we will officially present his badge to him.
All right, so we'll save the tie cutting until then. But
the initiation process.
We're very happy that you're here, Steve. This is going to be, I think, a rewarding and beneficial relationship for both of us, both the city and yourself as well. So. Welcome to the city of Arroyo Grande. It's fitting that you're here on our birthday, and we'll look forward to a more formal ceremony. Deb will get to stick you with your badge when we pin it on in August. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the confirmation of Stephen Annibale as the city's new police chief.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Steve, congratulations. Okay, now we're going to go back to our public hearing, 9A. Consideration of Development Code Amendment 06-004.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As background, the neighborhood plan area is about 22 acres in size and is divided into sub-areas 1 and 2. Last October, the City Council considered what we call the East Village Neighborhood Plan as part of the Cherry Creek Project and determined that it was adequate in meeting the requirements of the general plan based on a finding that sub-area 1 provides all the necessary utilities, circulation, and infrastructure for future development of sub-area 2. In November of last year, Council adopted an ordinance to change the zoning of the sub-area 1 property from residential rural to single land. Regarding the zone change, the sub-area 2 project area is roughly 13 acres in size and is currently zoned residential rural, which allows one dwelling unit per acre. During the general plan update in 2001, the land use designation for the property was changed from low density to medium density residential, allowing up to 4.5 dwelling units per acre. The purpose of this development code amendment is to bring the zoning into compliance with the general plan by changing the zoning from residential rural to single family.
Kelly, excuse me. Don, could you hit that light switch back there, the middle bank of lights?
Oh, that's better.
There you go. Thanks.
So the Planning Commission considered the Development Code Amendment in January of this year and recommended that Council amend the zoning of the property as proposed. Issues discussed at the Planning Commission included constraints of the property, changing the general plan and zoning designation to a lower density while creating quote-unquote, no net loss of residential units citywide based on state law, creating an overlay for the property to allow a lower density, and applying a specific plan designation to the property. Only the proposed zone change was forwarded to the council as a recommendation. So, sub-area 2 is divided into 10 parcels developed with 12 residences. Two of the properties have second units on them. If the development code amendment is approved, the new single-family residential zoning for the area would allow densities up to 4.5 dwelling units per acre or 45 new residences based on gross acreage. These properties are accessed by a 15-foot-wide private road, commonly referred to as Dirt Cherry, which is currently unpaved and owned by many different people. Dirt Cherry will be widened to 32 feet along the sub-area 1 boundary. It is anticipated that this road will be widened to city standards along the sub-area 2 boundary as well, although after discussing this issue with various residents out there, staff is recommending that the width be 24 feet instead of the 32. All road improvements in this area will be the responsibility of any future development. Another private access road is Larley Lane. This connects perpendicular to Dirt Cherry. Larley Lane indicates a 130-foot wide buffer, and that's for both sub-areas. So given the various constraints of the property, and that includes the creek channel, the creek setback area, the riparian vegetation, agricultural buffer, and the existing pattern of development, it is not physically possible to develop the 13-acre property to the allowable maximum density of 4.5 dwelling units per acre. But based on the conceptual design prepared by Mark Vasquez of Design Graphics, it is estimated that roughly 8.5 acres remain as potentially buildable once the constraints are removed. This equates to about 37 units or 2.9 dwelling units per acre. Staff has worked with Mark Vasquez and RRM Design Group to update the East Village neighborhood plan and integrate the newest conceptual design for sub-area 2. Staff is recommending that the revised neighborhood plan be formally adopted as a planning tool for future development. And I wanted to bring to your attention that I did distribute earlier this evening some revisions, just minor revisions, to the neighborhood plan. Just want to make sure you got those. As discussed in the staff report, an alternative to all this is to require a specific plan for the project site as a method of controlling density and ensuring that adequate infrastructure and agricultural buffer would be provided. However, history with this type of planning tool has shown that the specific plan process is cumbersome and it's expensive. It is staff's opinion that this process is actually unnecessary, since a neighborhood plan overlay already exists on the property, and coordinating a more detailed specific plan with 10 separate property owners would be a long and complicated process. So, to conclude, the Planning Commission recommends that Council introduce an ordinance amending the zoning map to change the designation of the Subarea 2 property from residential rural to single-family residential. Staff further recommends that Council adopt a resolution approving the East Village neighborhood plan. And then as an alternative, Council can modify the ordinance and or resolution as appropriate and introduce the ordinance and adopt the resolution.
Report. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have one question. I don't know whether, Steve, you need answers or not. We say that it's physically impossible for someone to bring in 59 units in here if we were to go forward and zone this 4.5 units per acre because of the constraints of the creek setbacks and the ag buffer. But if someone were to come forward and say, look, you've zoned it for 4.5 units per acre, that means I can put 57 units in here, 59, whichever it is, and here's my plan to do that, be it through a PUD or something to pack them into small lots. If we approve this tonight, what kind of defense do we have against that?
You could change the or amend the neighborhood plan to prohibit PUDs. There's a lot of discussion about PUDs in the neighborhood plan, but you can certainly do that if that's the wish of the council.
Thank you.
Actually, I do have one.
Okay. Councilmember Fellows.
Kelly, a moment ago you mentioned that subarea 1, I think I quote you, subarea 1 provides, and then so on, the necessary infrastructure for anything that goes on in subarea 2. Subarea 1 is not developed, so everything in subarea 2 has to wait for subarea 1 infrastructure to go in. Is that correct?
Or the developer in subarea 2 would have to provide all those utilities that otherwise would have been provided through subarea 1.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mayor Pro Tem.
This is probably for Tim. This conceptual plan that we're looking at right now, I've had a chance to meet with some of the people that live in the neighborhood, and I believe wholeheartedly that this is their intention to do what is being depicted here. But I guess the same concern that I have with, as Councilman Costello has, is, and the PUD obviously could be a way to maybe get around some of that, but one of my concerns has been that the difference between what is being proposed in the conceptual plan here and what is potentially possible could make it financially viable to actually come and clear the entire property off and forget about all the homes that exist today. I don't think there's any historical homes there. There might be one. So realistically, it would actually be fairly easy to do that. And so my question is, does this plan that we have here have any binding power, or is this strictly kind of a tool to say this is one of the ideas like we do in a lot of the design guideline type of things?
Tool, with the caveat that all the development code provisions that apply to any project would apply to this project unless you take action to prohibit them.
And then, as well, what about... I just lost my train of thought there. That one's gone. I'm going to come back to it, I'm sure.
Okay.
I was listening, actually. That's a problem. I don't usually listen.
You always listen.
Do you have anything?
Yeah, real quickly. On the 24-foot road versus the 32, I saw Don here a minute ago, but is Public Works signed off on that? Normally, I know they don't accept anything less than 32 is for city properties.
I asked the Public Works Department, and they were fine with that, that the road width for travel lanes is fine. There's just not going to be any parking on either side.
So we're just eliminating the parking on
right.
that. And mm-hmm. are we reducing the road on sub-area 1 then to 24 feet as well?
No, that remains as 32 feet.
I'm kind of curious why.
There's parking on one side.
So why is there parking required in sub-area 1 but not sub-area 2?
I think it's the feeling of the rural atmosphere in sub-area 2. They didn't want parking. They just figured that nobody's going to walk from that street all the way back to where development is likely to occur.
And in sub-area 1 they are?
Apparently. The smaller lots in sub-area 1.
The other question I had relates to the buffer. You stated that the neighborhood plan provides the buffer, but just to clarify for the public, actually it just delineates where the buffer would be. There's actually no provision here that will require the development of the buffer as part of the action we're doing tonight.
I was writing. Sorry,
oh.
That was the question.
If you want to answer, Tim, go ahead. But I think you were listening.
The buffer itself will depend on projects that come in subsequent to adoption of the plan.
And is there any way that we can, as part of this action tonight, require the development of the buffer, which I'll get into my comments, which I think is a key piece of the rezoning of this land to higher density. But is there any way that we can require, through our action tonight, the actual development of the buffer before the... before the rest of the development takes place? In other words, a development that's not directly affected by the buffer itself.
If a property owner chose not to develop,
there's no tie-in between all the properties
that's correct. And if you actually look at the language in our development code that establishes the buffer, sort of cutting to the chase in terms of this question, it states that all new development adjacent to any designated agricultural district shall be required to provide an agricultural buffer. Development, as used in this section, means subdivision of land, use permit, and building permits for new residential units. So the code sets it up for the buffer to be required as a part of future development. It wasn't intended to come as a part of the legislative process itself because we don't own the land.
So even though we're increasing the density here, in an area adjacent to a farm operation, we can't require the buffer for the entire area?
Based on what's out there now, no. It's subject to new discretionary development as it comes in, if it comes in.
Did you want to go back to your other one?
Yes, it actually came to me. The question that I was going to have, if we were to do away with the PUD option And since if we were to adopt this tonight and it has this overlay, which is now becoming binding and part of the document, how does that impact with the state numbers as far as that we have in our housing plan that show you, I understand that we have this zoning that says that technically you can do this, but then we have this other kind of overriding thing that says you can't do it. So are we going to take a hit there, or do they, I guess, how's that treated?
Candidly, I don't know. And maybe we should turn to Kelly with regard to this question. What we designated in our housing element for this particular site, I don't recall. But that is not going to be you're not required to comply with it unless people come in for development. You can't compel development. You can only zone for it. And so essentially we've established a zoning framework for it. But unless someone chooses to develop, we won't be meeting those particular thresholds. And HCD only requires you to provide for that development. You know, you can't compel development. You have to zone appropriately for it. And I know we comply with whatever we submitted, and I know this is consistent with that. I don't know if I'm answering your question, though.
Well, you are, but the concern that I have is because we are zoning for it, but then we're also, it's not the applicants that are actually saying, I mean, technically they've all worked together, and we all know that this is actually what they want to do. But at the same token,
if we lock out PUDs, whether that prevents us from meeting that threshold. So I'll sort of turn to Kelly.
Well, the housing element with regard to this particular piece of property spoke to just the zoning, the land use at the time, which is 4.5 dwelling units per acre. So we had a table that, you know, we had to meet our allocation, and so we had to show how we were going to do that by changing zoning and you know, upzoning places or lots and just trying to figure out how we're going to get to that number. So with applying the neighborhood plan has always been on this property since 2001, which was before we even submitted to the state. So I don't see how it could be how it could be a problem. The zoning hasn't changed. So,
yeah, let me jump in here for a second, Kelly. In looking at the housing legislation, I seem to recall that there was a considerable amount of discussion about the available, you know, you can zone for a certain density, but they did not throw the baby out with the bathwater totally when it came to considering the reality of buildable space and some of the environmental constraints as well. And I think I think what the neighborhood plan does is lay out reasonable conditions that exist out there. And so the zoning is in place, I think, if I understood Tim correctly. We haven't downzoned. If anything, we've upzoned for that particular area, for sub-area 2. And if we lay a condition with regard to the PUD on there, all the PUD does, I think, is recognize those constraints that exist out there. So I don't see where we're going to cross swords with HCD on this one. I just don't see it.
Imagine so at all.
Let me just jump in one other thing. I think we're losing perspective on the fact that any subdivision that comes in is subject to your discretionary approval, subject to CEQA, which will identify the same constraints we're talking about in the plan, and subject to your approval. In other words, the PUD would also be subject to your discretionary approval, and you'll have to look at the whole package subject to the public hearing process to determine what's an appropriate density. You're not required to meet those densities. You still have to comply with state law. You still have to comply with CEQA. So although we're looking at adjacent, well, it's the 100, if it's 130-foot buffer, it's whatever properties from the border of the agricultural property comprise that 130 feet.
Okay, thanks. And Kelly, this plan we see up there, the proposed neighborhood plan, can I correctly assume that every property owner listed, every property owner there has signed on the dotted line and is okay with that plan? That's what they can live with?
As far as I know, but I would defer to the representative. I'm seeing Nora's head nodding, so yes, that is correct.
All right, thanks.
That's all. Kelly, I have a couple of questions on the staff report, page 3. And and I was listening to your explanation on the road improvements, and I misunderstood you, but if you look at the last paragraph, it says, after discussions with residents, staff is recommending the roadway be narrowed to 24 feet wide through subarea 2 with no on-street parking. But then the last sentence, the road widening and improvements would be the responsibility of future development and would extend from the boundary of subarea 1 to propose. Are you talking about widening from 18 to 24?
Well, from the existing width of Dirt Cherry, which is 15, 16 feet, you're going to have to widen along both subarea 1 and subarea 2, and any proposed development would have to provide those improvements. So, for instance, if somebody at the very end of subarea 2, like the miners, if they wanted to develop their property first, all of subarea 1 frontage and subarea 2 is going to have to be improved, and if it's not already done by subarea 1 people, then he's going to have to put those improvements in himself. But yes, it would be, we're proposing that it, well, it's approved for 32 feet with parking on one side for subarea 1. We're suggesting, and it's of course up to your discretion what you want to do, but we're suggesting that subarea 2 just be 24 feet without parking, starting at Lyerly Lane and going to the end.
Okay. Kelly, the other Kelly, do we have our pointers tonight? Integrating this entire project with whatever is ultimately decided for Newsom Springs. And I'm not getting a warm fuzzy here. Mm-hmm. Whenever we start, looking at drainage on an individual basis, when especially in this particular area where we've got some considerable area-wide drainage issues, can you make me feel a little better on that, or maybe
Don
can?
Well, I talked to Public Works about particularly subarea 2. The land is pretty flat, and it was just considered the easiest thing to do would be to have drainage on site, either through, detention basins or, some other kind of mechanism, vault or something like that. We haven't gone out there and studied it. We've just, as far as I know, that would be a really reasonable thing to consider for subarea 2 is to have on-site drainage. Unless if you want somebody from Public Works to address it further, that's about the best I can do.
Well, I think as the way I understood your concern was making sure we were going to be able to come, not necessarily how we were handling the water or they would handle the water within subarea 2, but I think I read your comments as being the concern of how do we make sure that we handle Newsom Springs water coming down from these options that we're currently considering in the Newsom Springs EIR.
Well,
is that correct?
If you recall the discussion on Newsom Springs, there were several options, and I think we ultimately decided that a couple of them were potentially feasible. One was traversing underground through the ag property in a manner similar to the Acada project further up Branch Mill. And then the other circumvented the ag field around Branch Mill and then into subarea 1. So all I'm saying is that if we're considering drainage overall, if we step back and take a look at it at subarea 2, I get a little bit nervous when we talk about individual vaults and basins when we've got a potentially, regional drainage problem up there that may have to integrate a little tighter than
their lots. So I believe that kind of summarizes the review and discussion at this point.
Okay. Uh, I was wondering, I had an opportunity to meet with some of the homeowners out there as well with the Mayor Pro Tem. Kelly, has there been any discussion at all about the maintenance of the common areas? And I guess in this case, we're talking about two private roads. How is that going to occur, or have you had any discussions with the property owners along those lines?
Well, I believe it would be like with any subdivision, anybody who has benefit from the private road would have to pay in for the just some kind of a maintenance district. We think it would just be.
We might want to ask Don to come up on this one because we've had a couple of other examples. A maintenance district would normally be established when the city was going to take ownership of the road. This would be a private road owned by the area, and there would be no HOA. Normally an HOA would handle it. But we do have a couple examples where similar situations exist in town that Don can explain how those work now. They're not without their difficulties, but they do work.
We do have a road off of Fair Oaks. That's it was an old county road, but it's privately owned and privately maintained. And the way it works is that the homeowners get together and they decide what the maintenance is going to be and how much the cost is going to be, and then they divide up the cost and pay for the improvements that they need to have. That's one instance. We also have another road that's not paved that, you know, one of the property owners just takes care of and grades it. So we have two instances, one paved, one non-paved, that similar situation of within the city already.
Okay, and what is the city's role, or do we have one, in facilitating something like that for the parties involved?
Right now, we don't play a role in the. And the improvements, I shouldn't say that. We play a minor role because I've been out there to help them decide what the improvements should be. And so, you know, I give them options and sometimes costs and sometimes they buy the property. So there's no misunderstanding about who's going to maintain what.
Okay. Let's see. Did you have one more, Chuck? Okay. Councilmember Guthrie and then Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I do. Real quick to return to the drainage. On a previous plan, we did actually have a drainage program that showed it tying in. I'm wondering why we abandoned that. We had it tying in through, I'll call it, through the connecting road that runs through the Looney property, and actually brought it over and tied it directly into the drainage plan that went all the way into the creek.
You know, that may have been shown on another plan. It may have been a conceptual idea of some possible way to, you know, deal with drainage issues. We haven't really got to the point where we've analyzed what would be needed. I think the mayor had a suggestion of maybe looking at it as a global or a sub-area 2 type of thing where we could have one place where we could deal with drainage, and I don't know if that's correct or not, but I think that there's an opportunity to, in the future projects, to really look at and specifically how we can deal with the drainage.
Well, I guess whether if we're looking at coordinating the drainage, it seems that now would be the time to do it in the neighborhood plan. We've gone through this, you know, particularly over in my neighborhood in the Elm Street area, where in fact we never did deal with this, and now every property owner provides these little tiny retention basins that usually get filled in later on. And we're going to have a similar situation here. If in fact we're looking to have a neighborhood-wide drainage plan, it seems that we should be providing at least some language that says we're going to develop a neighborhood. If we're going to say everybody's going to handle it individually, that's what's going to happen because of they're not going to develop at the same time. Mm-hmm. So if that's the direction staff is and the mayor are talking about, then really we should be providing for that somewhere in this neighborhood plan now, whether we have to actually delineated or not in this plan or not, I'm not sure, but I do think that if that's what we're, I have deep concerns about having individual drainage on individual properties because they're almost impossible for us to then enforce later on. So you've dealt with that already, so I would think that would be something we'd want to fix. But
And I think that if that's the council's will, I mean, I think we can incorporate that into whatever direction you want to provide to do a future analysis and make sure that's part of it.
The second question I had is probably more for Kellen. This has to do with the PUD. Do in the conceptual plan that we have,
lot covers, that kind of thing.
We do have relatively small building envelope when you take out the
well, that's because of the buffer, yes. But it's still, they still own the property, so the lot isn't.
I understand small. The lot's not, yeah. But the it would, how would we deal with, in fact, if they couldn't, in fact, deal with the setbacks and some of the other issues there without a PUD process?
If there was a setback issue and we didn't allow PUDs, then they would have to either get a minor exception or a variance.
Thanks. That's my question.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions or clarifications?
I have.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'll beat the drainage one more time, too. There was somewhere in one of the packets we got this time, there shows some arrows, actually, of the water coming down. It was called out as surface drainage on the road. And I guess that the idea of that would be to bring it down and dump it into this collection area, because I'm not going to deal with the actual neighborhood, because I look at that a little bit different in that we're not going to approve any of the projects that don't have drainage dealt with. But one of the concerns that I have is we are talking about this road going in, and we still do have some. While I realize that the flow is not as extreme in this area as it is down here off of the ag property, there is some, I imagine, that comes here. And so what I'm wondering is, this is probably an area that should be dealt with is how we're going to collect this. And right now we're requiring the road to be smaller so that we really won't even have an extra buffer there if we wanted to say, okay, fine, let's shrink the road to put a drainage ditch in. We've already shrunk the road. So my concern would be one with that. So I kind of like to understand how we're going to deal with that. And I'm going to throw all these out because they kind of tie together somewhat. Then also, when we talk about the road, we're talking 24 feet. Are we talking about a sidewalk on there as well?
Yes.
Okay, because I didn't see that in anywhere in here. It might have been in the
sidewalk on one side.
Okay. And then how are we dealing with the sewer and water issue? I know that the plan has been that sub-area 1 will stub it out, and then there's been some discussion about whether they'll bring it all the way through or not. But that's a major expense versus potentially even doing the road. And so I'm wondering where in this and how is it going to get paid for? Because the one thing that I think I've made real clear is I don't want to see us getting stuck with the bill because development is taking place in a haphazard way that we would not normally be planning a neighborhood where we have 12 different owners or whatever the number is. You have to solve this on your own. We're not going to allow you to go forward with your... So let's just use the example. Let's say the miners were the ones back in this corner here were the ones that wanted to develop first. We're going to say to them, you either have to do the sewer and the water yourself or hopefully get everybody to chip in some, or we're not. And so we're just going to leave it in their court to resolve it? Is that the plan? Okay. I think that's all for now. Thank you.
Okay. Any other last-minute questions or clarifications? No. All right. This is a public hearing. And we would invite members of the public who are here this evening to speak on 9A to come forward. We would ask that you try and adhere to the three-minute rule. Please address the council as a whole.
Good evening. Mark Vasquez. I'm the, property owner's advocate, is what I'll say. This has been a long road. I know that you were involved in the sub-area 1 process, and the owners of sub-area 2 became involved later in that process as that went along. And actually, I think through this whole process has we've come up with something that I guess the sub-area 1 stimulated sub-area 2 to kind of get together and talk and come up with something that worked for everybody out there. So I want to say that the end result of the process, as you see it up on the screen, is something that has been looked at from a standpoint of general overall planning for the area and also for the individual owners needs, wants, and becoming a cohesive group. I think it's admirable that they all got together. There's 10 owners there, 10 different property owners involved in this that got together and said, okay, well, they're looking for a neighborhood plan. Let's come up with something where we all feel comfortable with it. And what you see up on the screen is the result of that. And I think that that was a great effort on their part. They came to me a while back and said, hey, here's where we're at. We know we need to look at this. We know what we'd like to see in our neighborhood here. Can you help us kind of focus on the fact, and it's been hit on several times tonight, that what tonight's hearing is all about is the change in the zoning to bring it consistent with the general plan, and the approval of the neighborhood plan, which sets the general tools out there for the specific applications that will be coming in the future. And I know I've sat and I listened to your comments, and I think that one of the things that we've got to keep in context here is that the people that have put this effort into sub-area 2, they're not applicants. They're here as property owners representing their interest, but the zoning change is something that was brought about by the city. So they're not at a place yet to deal with some of the very specifics that you've talked about. And I think they're good concerns. I think things such as the drainage and that are concerns that need to be looked at. I feel certain that those things will be looked at through the process that is yet to come. So I think that what we would really like to see, and I know that I believe I represent all the property owners in the area, that they would like to see the zoning come into conformance with the general plan, the neighborhood plan approved, which is the general planning tool, so that they can come in, because there are different owners, come in at their time when things are right for them to come in and make their applications and deal with some of these specific issues. I feel certain that city staff and the approving bodies, both the Planning Commission and yourselves, will review those applications carefully and will address those issues that have been brought up, such as drainage and maintenance of the roads and those things at that time. I would also like to say that the property owners, I mean, it's in their interest, such as those issues of drainage and maintenance, for them to make sure that those things happen. They live there. It's not like they're developers that are coming in from out of the area. They're going to come in and do this project and leave. Their homes are there. They live there. The people, although there's no guarantee that people don't sell homes and move, these people have a vested interest in this project because they live there and they're looking for development potential, but again, something that is compatible with their lifestyle and their area there. So I think that those issues that you have brought up are important. I think they'll be dealt with down the road. I think tonight that I think, because it's a preliminary stage, we'll get looked at harder. It may get looked at as a comprehensive solution for multiple property owners. It may be done on an individual basis. I think it's going to depend on the lay of the land out there as to how that final outcome works out. But I do believe that, again, through the process, all those things will get looked at carefully and resolved. So I guess what I'm seeing as your issue tonight is to hopefully approve this planning tool. Again, I want to emphasize that this is what the neighborhood has proposed. This is what I've been in numerous meetings with the property owners, and they have all had input as to what they liked, disliked, and how they saw development coming. And this seems to be something that, while you're changing the zoning to a single-family zone, as the numbers show that Kelly talked about, it's not physically possible with the constraints to develop lots that meet the single-family size of minimum of 7,200 square feet, and these are all shown at 8,000 square feet or larger. and get that kind of density there. It would require something different than that, which is not something that the neighborhood is looking for. I don't think that's something that, from what I'm hearing, that the city is looking for. And so I think that if it came down to an issue, and there have been some concerns about the PUD process, well, that's something that should be addressed. But I don't. This, the people that have been involved in this, that's not their vision. This is their vision here of what they're looking for. The main thing, and this was the objective that was given to me when we started this whole process, was they said, okay, well, here's what the zoning is going to be, and no one came in with preconceived ideas and said, okay, I want these lots just like this. They came in and said, okay, here's what the zoning is going to be. Can you show us what we can do with this? And that's what I did. I took the constraints of each property and said, okay, well, because of the way this develops, I can't look at this as an entire piece of property. That's not the way it works. We've got different owners, and I have to make lots that, with the constraints that are on each property, is not developable because it's out in the creek area. So each project is going to have its own little nuances to deal with, and I think, as I say, those things will be dealt with on an individual basis for the individual property owners to take care of when their applications come forward. So I guess what I just want to stress in the overall picture here is that this is a neighborhood plan. That's the way it was designated. So the neighborhood got together, and the neighborhood said, where do we want to go? This is what they came up with. This is how they want their neighborhood. I think that's where the city was headed when that all happened, is that there's a neighborhood here. How does this neighborhood want to develop, not how do we just cut this up and make it work? So I guess I would say that I would ask that you review this, and hopefully you would approve not only the zoning change but the neighborhood plan, and do that tonight. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, we may have a few in a moment.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Fool Estes, 8011 East Cherry. I'm right in the middle, and I'm the one that's most affected by what's going on here to a great extent, because my land is considered part of the buffer. One-third of my land is considered the buffer. And under the current market conditions, because you put a buffer there, you're costing me about $1 million. What I'd like to know is, where's my check? What am I getting for you putting a buffer on my land when it should have been on the farm in the first place? I know there of you folks of you here that want the buffer and you want this and that, but I've said it before, the buffer won't work. You're actually creating a liability for the city. Now, if we talk about what's going on today, you're being asked to zone this so we can do something about it. And as far as the neighborhood plan, as Mark said, we went to him and penny-picking little bitty things apart. In my opinion, that would get the job done, because this has been going on for how many years now? What, 8, 10 years? It's a long time. And it's costing people money. You're costing the folks on phase one. They put out money. They're paying interest on that land. And you've been dragging your feet as hard as you can. And I don't understand that. You're supposed to help the folks around here, not do this to them. And I've seen people give up projects here because you don't give them directions. What you do is, as they fulfill your requests, you throw another one out there. And that's not the way you're supposed to do things. Drainage was talked about. You can't make a puddle stand on our property. You throw a hose down and it won't puddle. So any drainage problems is for the surrounding area. And if we did have a drainage problem And if we absolutely have to have a buffer there, it's either the biggest dog park you ever saw and the most expensive one, or you dig it out and you make it a retention pond for drainage for that. And that way, if you want to, you can breed a few West Nile virus-carrying mosquitoes. Had a couple of other things. Retention pond. Well, let's leave it at that. I kind of have voiced my opinions here a little bit. But we've put forth some effort. We've tried to accommodate you. So I'd like to see something done here rather than saying, well, we're worried about this or we're worried about this. You'll never dot all the I's and cross all the T's, no matter how hard you try. What you need to do is help folks move along so that in the future they'll be more inclined to come along with some of the ideas that you have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Once again, we'd be grateful if you could try and adhere to the three-minute rule.
I thought it was 1 minute. I'll be brief.
It can be.
It will be, believe me. My name is Tony Janowiz, and I reside at 447 Lyerly Lane, Arroyo Grande. I just want to say good evening to you all. I won't have to say all your names because I'm trying to save time here. But let me read this to you, and we'll be done with it. You're all very familiar with the subject before you tonight. Council member questioned, how would you ever get 12 property owners to agree on a neighborhood plan? Well, here we are before you tonight, and we do have a plan. This requirement of a neighborhood plan took a lot of effort on all property owners and should be recognized and commended. Yes, it was difficult, and it took a lot of time and effort to carefully understand each individual property owner's concerns and ideas for our neighborhood and those surrounding us. We respect the rights of the farmers, the importance of the agricultural buffer, those owners of small parcels, and every individual who lives in this area, and our plan reflects it. The fact that we could all come together during several meetings over the years and hire Mark Vasquez to compromise a plan we've all agreed upon is a tribute to the positive thinking and insightful people who comprise our neighborhood. As time has passed and property becoming so expensive in Arroyo Grande, the importance of this proposed rezoning has increased. It has personally touched my family, as I cannot think of a better environment for my grandchildren to live and grow and become dedicated citizens to the city and community where they and their parents and even their grandfather, me, were born. Our subarea 2, which it has now become known as, is a unique, safe, and family-friendly neighborhood. Your acceptance of our plan will ensure this quality neighborhood to continue for future generations. It will also be a testament to the people of Arroyo Grande who can come together, remain objective, resourceful to meet each other's needs, and maintain positive attitudes towards a common goal to benefit everyone. I ask you to do the same by accepting the recommendation of your planning commission and to introduce an ordinance amending the zoning map of the subject property from rural residential to single family. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Good evening. My name is Matt Janowiz, and I live at 445B Lyerly Lane, right next door to my parents, Tony and Rosemary Janowiz. I currently rent from them and have done so for the past 5 years, and so that's why I continued my education, and I just finished law school, passed the bar, and so with the hopes that I could afford housing in this area. And living where I live, I am able to get front seats in this whole project that's been slowly developing, and over this time, I would have hoped that by the time I finished my education, got a job, that this whole area would have been able to be developed. And fortunately, I've seen the neighborhood get together, and it does look hopeful that this project will go through. That is, if it is approved by you guys. So it was my intention to come here and kind of give you a perspective of a younger person's idea of this. No offense to mom and dad, but I've just seen a lot of my friends who I've grown up with in this community have to move to Santa Margarita, Tascadero, and heaven forbid Santa Maria, because they can't afford to live here. Just kidding. I like Santa Maria. But I would really like to stay here and give back to the community, and I see this as a good opportunity for me to be able to afford a lot or a house eventually. That is, if this does get split and my dad gives me a good deal. So I would really like you to approve this plan, and I thank you for your time.
Good. Thank you. And congratulations on passing the bar exam. Anyone else?
Hello, my name is Damian Mavis, and I'm the developer of Subarea 1. I'd just like to quickly kind of go through how the proposed Subarea 2 fits into our project. I'd like to say right off the bat is I think it's quite an accomplishment that they actually got everybody together and made what to me looks like a great plan. I think that it really fits with our plan as far as infrastructure goes, both streets and all the different utilities. Rural transition, which I think is kind of an important concept in this city from what I've been able to observe. I think it fits the housing element, brings zoning in conformance with the general plan, which is very important, obviously. I think this is kind of a necessary first step. All the details seem like they'll be worked out on a case-by-case basis as projects come forward individually. But I think this is a necessary step to give the owners in Subarea 2 the security to realize that if they do propose a reasonable project, that there's some surety that project will be accepted. So to me, it sounds like the goals of the city council, as well as the staff, as well as the owners out here in Subarea 2 are aligned, and it seems like to me that it would be a very good idea to go forward and accept the neighborhood plan and rezone the property in Subarea 2 to conform with the general plan. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Good evening to the mayor and the city council members. My name is Nora Looney, and I reside at 444 Lyerly Lane in Rio Grande. I would like to thank all of my neighbors in Subarea 2 for coming together and designing a neighborhood conceptual plan that we can all be proud of. I also want to thank Kelly and her staff, the city manager, Mark Vasquez, and the city council. This has been a long time-consuming process, but we've all worked together in a very positive fashion to come up with a plan that addresses the issues. On behalf of all of the neighbors of Subarea 2, I want the council to know that we haven't had any opposition to our conceptual plan within the landowners in our area. I am proud of that fact because we are all in agreement with our vision for this very special area. Tonight we are looking at the zoning issue. The reason we decided to hire Mark Vasquez started out as a tool to prove that downzoning wasn't the best solution for the area. And because of the constraints that already exist, SF zoning worked best for our area. The property will not build out to the full SF potential. We have answered many more questions as we have worked on this plan. Some issues will be solved as each applicant comes forward with their plan.
Mr. Costello, why don't you go first?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I'll make this fairly brief. I will go back and focus on the two things we are doing here tonight, which I'm just reminded of. And one, we're looking at the development code amendment to change the zoning to bring it into line with the general plan as was amended. And second, to approve the neighborhood plan. My only concern is that if we do change the zoning to single family, and I do support that, if we do change the zoning single family and accept the neighborhood plan as it's submitted, that someone might come in later on and try to put in some sort of PUD that would cluster enough homes to get up to the maximum that's allowable. What I'm hearing from staff is that we have the option of putting in some sort of restriction in place on that that would prevent that. I'm also hearing from all the people that participated in putting together the neighborhood plan that they have no objection to putting that kind of restriction on it. So that being said, I can support the two issues in front of us tonight. One, to go ahead and change the zoning to single family, and two, to accept the neighborhood plan as it's been submitted. I'm not going to worry about the drainage at this point. I think that any projects that come forward, we're going to look at those very carefully. We're going to make sure they comply with the agricultural buffer. We're going to make sure that the drainage is done correctly. So I think that that's safe. I don't think we need to go to the process of putting a specific plan together for this. You talk about a lengthy process so far. That would be far, far lengthier, and it'd be a lot more expensive. So I can support tonight the adoption of the single-family zoning and the adoption of the neighborhood plan.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I think as when we talked about sub-area 1, I want to go back to when we put together the general plan and what how this came about, or at least my experience with how it came about. When we were reviewing this area in the general plan, there were a number of concerns that, or a number of objectives that we were trying to accomplish in rezoning this area. Certainly, the key one that was discussed at that time was, in fact, that there was a significant drainage issue in this area related to Newsom Strings. Yes, it's not generated from here, but it was a problem. It was a potential flooding for that entire neighborhood. So that was certainly one of the main objectives. A second objective, of course, was that we were looking for opportunities for infill projects, and this was clearly a great place for an infill project. I've always supported the DIF, and we had the buffer in place. In sub-area 2, while we do have an infill project, we aren't the drainage isn't necessary here because it's being developed in 1, but we do not have the buffer in place. And it was certainly my understanding when we put together the general plan that we would provide this buffer at the same time that we did the development, not just on the one property, but that if we were going to increase the intensity of use adjacent to this farmland, that we would provide some physical protection for the farm operations next door. As it turns out, we're unable to do that tonight. We're unable to require what was, to me, a basic objective of that general plan. It's because we didn't spell it out. When someone was speaking earlier that we nitpick these things to death, the devil is in the details. And the detail is that, in fact, all but 3 of these lots can develop without the ag buffer ever being developed. And when I say an ag buffer, I mean an engineered ag buffer. I mean an ag buffer that we're reducing from what the county would require is 300 feet down to 130 feet because we believe that through special engineering, we can, in fact, accomplish the same thing in less distance. And that's what we did through a long process in sub-area 1. So while I'm very disappointed we can't do that tonight, I just don't see that we have an alternative. The opportunity to fix that was back when we changed the other ag issues. It was 4 years ago, when we went through the other properties, if we needed to fix this. Now, of course, we didn't realize we had this problem because I think at least I, and I don't know where the other council people are in this, but at least I believe that in the end, through the entire section, we would in fact accomplish this ag buffer concurrent with the development with the higher intensity of use. And that's in fact not what's going to take place. I'll tell you, if it's not clear, I'm very, very disappointed that that's not happening. But I also don't see the opportunity to where we can force it to happen. Both time is working against us. We're way deep into the process to now even try to reuse, because in my mind, the only really reasonable alternative here is actually to go all the way back to the original density. I know we're talking about reducing it by half, but actually, if we can't provide the buffer that provides the physical protections for the separation of uses, then really we shouldn't be increasing the intensity of use at all here and should go back to the original general plan. Based on time, I don't think we can do that. We're also hemmed in by the state's requirement that, in fact, if we want to go back to where we were, that we would, in fact, have to find what would be a whole bunch of units. I'm going to say it's 40 or 50 units in order to get back to and ask that it be on the in the buffer area. Then, in fact, we need to spell that out tonight, because based on our experience here, I can almost guarantee you there's no way that we could require a coordinated drainage later on, because we'd be told, well, you can't require an improvement on somebody else's property to handle the drainage from here. So if we go forward with this tonight without requiring staff to go back through this plan and provide some other drainage, then we are, in fact, approving drainage on individual properties. Maybe reasonable. I'm just saying that that's, in fact, what we're going forward with tonight. So I would prefer that we go back and look at the drainage. If there's council support for that, I will very reluctantly support going forward with this, because this was not, in my mind, the intent of the general plan when we put it together. And we just let this process get away from us. I just really feel very strongly that we should have been able to require the ag buffer here in advance of any of the other development. And apparently, that's not something that we can accomplish. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Fellows.
It's been, I think, 6 years, at least 6 years, since Damian Mavis and his partners came forward with Siberia 1, and through the process, pardon me, we ended up with a subdivision that, if it goes forward, is developed as he says it will, we have a partial solution to a massive drainage problem with the swale going up the middle, Cliff Branch's million-dollar gift to the city. We have an ag buffer that's very minimal, I think, but it was designed. If it goes in the way it's designed, that's a good ag buffer, decent ag buffer anyhow. To now go ahead and say that this sort of quasi-joint venture in subarea 2 is okay without a drainage solution for that, any water that flows onto those properties, and without a way to have an ag buffer, without the way to compel an ag buffer, my vote might be symbolic, but I can't support the plan as it is. I agree 100% with Councilman Guthrie, and I don't really see Councilman Costello's point when he says that we he's comfortable with the plan.
Question real quick, because I'm still concerned about the amount of control this plan actually has, and I'll refer to page 9 of the actual East Village Neighborhood Plan document, and in the middle of it there's a paragraph titled Water, Sewer, and Utility Facilities, and the second line in that sentence, or the paragraph, says the approval of the neighborhood plan does not lock in or approve the layouts within each subarea. Individual proposals will be reviewed separately by the city. That kind of contradicts, in my mind, what we're talking about, that by approving this tonight, we're locking in kind of this conceptual plan. And I'm not sure which way we're, if we got into, I'm just concerned that we seem to be doing two different things here, and so I would like to understand, you know, I'm trying to keep us out of lawsuits.
That seemed to be directed at me. It's a conceptual plan. If you look at the general plan requirement, the 21 acre area south of Red Granite Creek, east of Track 409 and north of East Cherry Avenue, designated single family residential median density, is subject to a requirement for a neighborhood plan to coordinate street drainage, water, sewer, ag buffer, creek trail, conservation open space considerations prior to approval of any subdivision or parcel map. It's worded very loosely, you know, purposely, because you want the flexibility moving forward to look at each proposal as it comes in, evaluate it, subject to the you know, the public hearing process and all the other checks and balances in the development review process and make a decision. It really is just, I mean, the lot layout you see is clearly non-binding. The plan says so. It's a concept plan. The teeth of this are minimal. It's really just an overview based on infrastructure and the ag buffer and a couple of those other issues. So don't think that this, you know, has the definition and complexity of a specific plan, which really delineates every use with great specificity. It doesn't. So I don't want you to labor under that misimpression that you're getting what's up there. If you read this, it is a fairly nebulous broad brush as to how you're going to size infrastructure and how you're going to develop the properties. But I think that was the intent when you read that provision. That probably seemed to be more of the intent as to what the council wanted then. You know, that may not be what this council wants, but
3,400 square feet is the net usable. And the concern that I have is, one, you have a very large house in the middle, which would be, I'm not sure if there's a historical value there or not. There may be, but it's definitely a very large home, so I would imagine that home would remain. My concern is if these three lots were to develop to their potential with setbacks and everything else, that you're actually talking about really cramming three homes in there. And so my conception was that if this lot were actually to go this way, this lot were to go this way, and then you split three here, these might not get to the 8,000, but they would definitely be over 72. My question is, because we're showing right now eight lots here, have we kind of said you're going to get eight lots? Or is it better to say, no, we'd like to see this conceptual plan revised right now to reflect, I think, really a better land use? Or if we go forward with it as it is right now, because I'm very uncomfortable. I mean, I'm very comfortable with everything else I'm seeing. That's the one thing that jumped out at me, is though we're going to have a really tight cluster. And then I think what we're asking for is, over time, encroachment into the ag buffer, which I know in sub-area 1 we were very strict on not even wanting garages placed in there, and we didn't want children playing in that area. And so my concern is, if we're basically creating what is in essence a 3,000-square-foot lot, and actually one of them has a private easement through it as well, there's no yard there. And so you're basically saying go play in the ag buffer. And so I'm really trying to not set up that. So I guess my question is, what would be better? Would it be better to say redesign this, or it's on the record that I don't like the eight lots?
Well, again, this is purely conceptual. What you see up there is not a subdivision. It's not intended to be a subdivision. It's intended to be a potential layout of all the lots. You retain discretion over subdivision approvals, the same discretion you have over every subdivision that comes in. If you think it's too dense and the findings can't be made, you direct them to, you either reject it entirely or you direct them to reconfigure it so that it's consistent with what the council believes is appropriate. The fact that you're now on the record saying that's not appropriate is certainly helpful in that regard. But again, this is not a binding configuration you see up there. It was never intended to be. The language in the plan basically says we have, I mean, I could pull it out for you, but it says we have a potential layout, but it's a concept layout, and every text of the plan. But the text of the plan makes it clear that this is not a subdivision. It's not intended to be a subdivision.
Okay. And then going into talking about the water and sewer facilities as well, I don't see anything in here that actually talks about who is to bear the expense. And should that be something that should be added to the document as well? So that because we basically talk about the road, the water, the sewer, and the utilities, but I didn't see it just as these things have to be accomplished. But I guess my concern is, again, because this is not your typical subdivision where the expenses would typically go to the developer. Should we be tightening up that language, or are you comfortable with how the language is right now?
I'm comfortable with it. It certainly could be tightened up. Typically, with regard to subdivisions that are a part of a larger planned development area, you'll require them to oversize and then subject them to some form of reimbursement. So that mechanism is available. But, you know, I don't want to be managing this plan, if you're not comfortable and you feel that that should be spelled out with greater definition, then certainly that's available to you. And these things can all be integrated into a revised document. So I don't think it necessarily has to be spelled out in that detail in this document, but I don't vote. And I think it could be, and it may be helpful if it is. Okay, so that's the waffling answer that...
Sorry, Mr. Mayor, to turn my summary into kind of a question and answer, but as I think everybody understands now, those are my issues, is the density issues. So the way I see it is to approve this plan tonight, for me, I would like to see the PUD option removed. I don't think that would be is appropriate here. I do believe that the lots are large enough actually to accommodate a home, and there is a little wiggle room with the variance if we were to need it on a setback issue. I would like to see spelling out, at least in a basic form that just says that, you know, the roads, water, sewer, and utilities expense will be bared by any applicant to re-subdivide. And then I would like it also to, whether we want to go forward and have some kind of conceptual change in the plans, or at least noted very strongly in the record that I believe that the Estes property is over... developed right now by one extra lot because of the concern that the actual buildable on the front three are very small. But other than that, I can approve the project. Thank you.
What I had envisioned, Tim, be that as it may, I want to come back to a couple of issues. First of all, the action that we're taking tonight, I assume... If we do approve this, we're going to be approving the documentation that's in front of us to include the site plan that Mr. Vasquez drew up, the one that we see up on the slide. And so although I recognize that we're going to have to consider each application as it comes forth individually, I still believe that the fact that we do have a buffer zone indicated on the map, it is at 130 feet. It does go from one end of subarea 2 to the other, and I think we had to make a slight adjustment to get that line corrected. But I want to take a step back and talk about the buffer itself. I guess I had a bit of a different take on how that buffer would look in subarea 2. Somebody mentioned that we were looking at a sort of a transition from more dense development in our core, moving out towards our rural fringe, and that we might want to take a different approach in terms of the way in which we configure the ag buffer itself. I still believe that ag buffer can be maintained. But I don't believe that it would be fitting in subarea 2, which clearly has much more of a rural feel to it than subarea 1. I don't believe that it would be that it would look or have the feel of a formal buffer if it were engineered similar to subarea 1. I think it should have a softer look. And I still think we can maintain the distance, but I still think that the property owners who are involved in establishing that buffer should have a little bit of latitude in terms of how they want to configure it. I don't see a cookie-cutter buffer extending through subarea 2 in a manner similar to what we see in subarea 1. I would like to maintain it, but I would like to have it perhaps be a little bit softer in its order for a couple of reasons, and it's not just Newsom Springs; it's the relationship with the Arroyo Grande Creek as well. I would hate to have us treat a particular application individually, move forward with a plan, only to find out that perhaps we could have, as Mr. Vasquez said, we could have a vault or some form of a basin that on one property that might serve multiple properties. There are all kinds of strategies that we just don't know yet how it's going to play out. But I would like staff to continue to work. In fact, I'm hoping that somewhere in the motion we make this clear. I would like staff to continue to work with the property owners out there to see if we couldn't come up with some form of a comprehensive drainage plan. There may be one property where a vault isn't necessary. There could be an adjoining property that serves one or more property owners. So it's going to depend on the lay of the land out there and obviously coming up with a strategy that would work. I would also agree that since there seems to be more flexibility in this particular strategy than I was hoping for, I would also support removing the PUD option. In fact, in order for me to move forward tonight, I would like to see that in the motion as well. I think those are all of my comments for this evening. Anyone have anything else? Okay, if not, then I will entertain a motion.
As you say, don't all jump in at once.
Ron, you guys knew this was coming.
Mr. Mayor, I'll make a motion that we adopt an ordinance to the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending the zoning map to designate the subject property as single-family residential SF, Development Code Amendment 06-00 properties.
Could you also add additional detail that the cost of the road, sewer, utilities, and water line are to be borne by the applicants?
Yes, I'd include that language.
Okay. Did you want to tag that on to
the neighborhood plan?
The zoning change ordinance, or do you want to tag that on to the resolution?
Which is it more appropriate, I'd ask council?
It's appropriate that we take the neighborhood plan first before we take the zoning. Once the zoning's in place, we're left with that zoning, no matter what the neighborhood plan says. So,
then I'll withhold the motion for the time being.
Well, let's just table it. It's still there.
Okay.
And why don't we move to the resolution first, and then perhaps you can...
And I'll move to this resolution. I move we adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande approving East Village Neighborhood Plan Case Number 04-001, for approximately 22 acres located east of the Noguera Court subdivision, north of the East Cherry Avenue extension, and south of the Arroyo Grande Creek. The applicant is Creekside Estates.
Okay. Now, can we tag on some of the language more appropriately here, Tim?
I think we need a second, and then we can start talking.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Now, discussion.
Okay, now we're going to include the fact that the PUDs are removed from the neighborhood plan option for subarea 2.
And can we just stop for a second and talk about that? Because if you actually look at the plan itself, it's replete with many, many references on several pages, starting on page 7, with references specifically to the PUD. It's also on page 11 and 12, and I'm sure it's in other places, which leads me to request that you take tentative action on this. In other words, I think we need enough of a retool, and this is all subject to the council's discretion. If you're going to take the PUD portion of it out, it really needs to be looked at thoroughly and carefully, and we're going to have to take out large portions of the text of the plan itself. So if it was my preference, you would take tentative action, direct staff to make these changes and to work with Mr. Vasquez and the neighborhood to make that particular change, in addition to whatever other changes are being requested. I think these are fairly significant, and significant enough where tightness and specificity, that also will need to be retooled. And out of an abundance of caution, it just makes sense to do it tentatively so we do it right. There's always a lot of danger in doing these last-minute changes ad hoc right at the meeting.
I will amend my motion to make it a tentative approval.
If the motion maker wouldn't mind, then, since we're going to be bringing this back with all these adjustments, would you mind if we also then had the site plan modified to reflect 7 lots on the Estes property instead of the 8?
I don't think that's necessary at this time. I think we have the option. When anyone comes forward with any kind of specific, any kind of development, that we're going to be able to measure each proposal on its merits, and at that time we can always reduce something.
I guess my way I look at that statement is it's a lot easier to give more than to take away a little bit, and so I guess it'd be easier to say yes, we'll look at it, and okay, you did find a good way to do 8 lots, but the way I'm seeing it right now, I don't think this is a good 8-lot subdivision, and so I hate to put anything out there in print where if this property were ever be sold, someone could believe that there may be some expectation that the city has signed off on this, whereas if there's only 7 there and they came in and said, here, I've got to create a way to do 8 and I can show you why it's going to work, I guess I'm just looking at it from I agree, there may be a better way to get 8 lots in here. I didn't see it, and I don't have a problem with that. I'm not sticking with that everything has to cross over the 8,000 threshold on the square footage. But my concern is that right now there could be, and I realize that what everybody's saying here is that this is not the gospel. We can make changes here, but I hate to start off with a higher one and then come back the other way.
I feel fairly comfortable from what the advice council was that we've got the option of doing that and that we're not entitling anyone to anything specific here.
Okay. We have a motion. And just so we have a clear understanding of the content of that motion, once again, it's tentative approval for the neighborhood plan. And fill in the rest, please. We're going to go back and we're going to...
At this point, we've only addressed taking out the PUD as an option within the neighborhood sub-area 2 neighborhood plan. We haven't addressed, if you're going to, the specificity with regard to the infrastructure improvements, and I don't know if that was intended to be included.
...ship with a creek. And and Newsom Springs, to the extent that it would be an issue, I don't know. But those are 3 factors, I think, that before any individual property owner comes forward, I would like to see. I'd like to see us do some strategizing. Maybe we don't get beyond that at this point, but at least I think it. I think if I owned property out there, I would. I'd feel much more comfortable if we had a. Kind of a comprehensive, at least some ideas of how to move forward with it, instead of relying on individual projects to come forward and then trying to wrestle with them, not knowing the effect or the influence of adjacent properties and the other factors.
Mr. Mayor, I think without the modification to the site plan, I'm going to withdraw my second.
Okay.
Under discussion, can I just ask real quick if it's all right at this point? Is it necessary that we include this at all? I mean, you kind of gave us the impression that there. I didn't think that a concept plan was actually required by the general plan. Actually, it's the language of the neighborhood plan, so we could actually drop the entire reference to this completely, is the way I heard it.
Yes, absolutely, if that's the direction of the council.
That makes anyone weak. All right, we have a motion on the table. Is there a second? I'll second it. I'm sorry, with those changes with regard to the drainage, I assumed.
Yes, that's fine. Those drainage changes are accepted.
Okay. Discussion? Further discussion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I have a have a comment and a question. I want to clarify that I think there are a lot of good points to the motion and to the plan. My sole hang-up at this point is the fact that if we deal with the buffer issue later as projects come forward, only the folks that own land in the buffer area or adjacent to the buffer area, it's my understanding, will be responsible for providing buffer. That leaves over half or far fewer than half the folks that own property there. bearing the burden. And the question is there a way to deal with that now, since we're tinkering with this, in order to get around that, to make it more equitable later on?
No.
Fellows?
No.
And Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
No. Okay. We've dealt with the resolution. And now we'll move to the ordinance with regard to zoning.
I would suggest you defer taking action on zoning until we have a neighborhood plan that works.
Okay.
You can't undo it once we've done it, although it's a two-step process. They're functionally interrelated.
Okay. So be it. Then I still need a motion to continue this, right? Do we have a ballpark or date uncertain?
I turn to Kelly and Mark at that point.
I would say a date uncertain at this point.
All right.
Mr. Mayor, I move we hold the motion on the development code amendment to change the zoning to a date uncertain.
All right. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? I'm going to jump in on this one. We're saying date uncertain. I would like to put this on the front burner and get the changes made and get this thing back to us as soon as possible. So we don't have to come up with a date certain. I'm not asking for that. I am asking for us to expedite it. So all right, any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Yeah. We're going to take about a 5 to 7 minute break, and then we'll reconvene and start with 10-8.
entered the contract with an outside contractor. They performed the work admirably in May of 2007. We performed the survey at the request following the completion of the speed survey to see if it slowed down the traffic at all, and it did. The 85th percentile actually came down to 40 miles per hour. In fact, it was just slightly more. Now, I've gone right by my slides that explained all this, but I think you get the general idea. Yeah, the 85th percentile speeds were 41 miles per hour in one direction, 42 miles per hour in the opposite direction on Rancho Parkway. The MUTCD allows you to go to the nearest 5-mile-per-hour increment, which would be 40 miles per hour. So with this, we reemphasize our staff recommendation to keep the speed limit the same between on Rancho Parkway between West Branch and Camino Mercado, and raise the posted speed limit from 35 miles per hour to 40 miles per hour between Camino Mercado and James Way. That is the conclusion of my staff report. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions for Mike on the staff report? No? This is not a public hearing, but if there are members of the audience who would like to come forward and comment on 10A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Once again, please be mindful of the three-minute rule, which I haven't enforced this evening, by the way, but this is a good time to start. Anyone like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment on 10A and bring this back. Councilmember Fellows, why don't you start us?
Well, I understand how the study was carried out. I'm pleased to see that the changes that were made to the paint, to the striping and so on, actually had a calming effect. It's pretty exciting, really, when you look at that sort of thing. And I think it's the conclusions are good. And so I support the recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello?
I agree. I think that the recommendations are reasonable, and I can support them all.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, I too agree. I'm glad we're able to get all of them resolved and finally being correct with the traffic court. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, this has been a contentious issue, and really I'm glad to see that the traffic calming measures worked, so I can support this. Thank you.
Okay, I'll make it unanimous, and I'm yes. Okay, we're down to 11A, which we've already addressed under new business. We'll move to 11B. Consideration of a center left turn lane on East Grand Avenue between Halcyon and El Camino Real.
Mr. Mayor, I have to step down on this issue due to a potential conflict of interest.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Fellows is stepping down on this. Okay, Don, go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. The city's capital improvement program includes a project to resurface East Grand Avenue between what is now El Camino Real and Halcyon Road. So as part of that project, we are looking at all of the improvements or aspects that we can improve as we do projects. One of the issues here is the accidents that we seem to be having, rear-end accidents on that street. So what we did was looked at restriping considerations. And part of that analysis, we looked at the traffic circulation, the accident rate, provisions for bike lanes. We actually looked at the roadway width and the geometry of the road and the site distance. Now, the existing lane configuration out there is there's the existing road width. For most of it, it's 62 feet from curb to curb. That's the road width. But there is one block in the middle that's only 58 feet wide. There's two lanes in each direction. There's parking out there. There's 10 spaces on the north side and 6 spaces existing on the south side. It is not presently striped with bike lanes, and the average daily traffic is about 19,000 vehicles. And so I'd like to try this up a little bit. Okay. This is the existing striping. What you're looking at is this is Oak Street, right here, the first street. That is where the existing two-way left turn lane ends. To the right of Oak Street, you have some properties here, some businesses, and you also have the McDonald's and AMPM, the 8-foot section. We'll go further down. This is the gas station and the music store and soccer strip mall. And this is where we come into another section, Alpine, South Alpine Street. Now we're back to a 62-foot section here, still striped with four lanes. And as we get closer to Rena, we have parking in this area and parking in this area on the south side. You can see where the two vehicles are parked in front of the real estate office there. Now we're at Rena. And then as we go towards Halcyon, you'll notice we have an island here, a planted island, a median island. It's tapered to move traffic over so that the traffic, you can see this vehicle trying to get into a left turn pocket. We have proposed two different striping configurations. Option A, which is, of course, the left turn pocket, the center turn lane, and this option retains the parking on the north and south sides. However, the number of spaces has to be reduced so that we can shift the lanes over to create the transition between the parking areas and the non-parking areas. The pros to this option includes maximizing the number of existing parking spaces. We're able to retain some on-street parking. It provides for adequate vehicle lane widths, and it was recommended and proposed that this be signed as a bike route. Some of the cons to this particular option is it does not provide for a separately striped Class 2 bike lane. And the travel lanes would be shifted closer to the curb, very similar to the section between the bridge over the 101 and what is now El Camino. You notice as you're traveling westbound, if you're making right turns into the AMPM, you may have to slow down, or if you're making right turns into what is now El Camino, you have to slow down a little bit so that people can negotiate that turn. There may be a lower entry and exit speeds from those driveways, which is an existing situation out there. Option B, of course, has the center left turn lane. Both options. There will be no bike lane striped for the one block on the north side between Bell and North Alpine Street. And this is the section I talked about that's adjacent to the gas station where the road width narrows down to 58 feet. Only until sidewalk driveway improvements can be constructed, which we've estimated in today's dollars at about $60,000 to $80,000. There would be no bike lane on the north side between North Rena and Halcyon without modifications to the raised median island. That's that section closest to Halcyon. We talked about where that raised planter median is. In order to create that turn pocket to the left, we had to move traffic over, and it's a tapered type island. So there'll be two sections without the bike lane on the north side. Some of the property concerns, there are some properties. I'm going to go back for a second if I can get back to my screen. I want to show you again what these look like as you're driving down the street. This is the section, this is option A, and this is starting at the AMPM. This is the existing section with the left turn lane. As we go west, we pass Barnett. There's the McDonald's there at the top of the screen. As we go further left, further west, is shown here how the lanes are configured. We pass Oak Street. This is where the existing two-way left turn ends, and now we're going to go to the west of Oak, and we're going to create a new turn lane there. These red lines, as you can see on either side, represent no parking. The green line, as you can see to the furthest to the left there, is a parking, designated parking area. So as we go further west, we're going past some of the businesses. This is where we have two residents that currently have parking. There's some parking there. You see a car parked there. And with the second option of no parking, there's potential for having them use spaces on the side street here. So as we go further west, most of the traffic now, as we're shifting lanes, this is the section that's on the north side, but we retain in front of these vacant buildings, but we retain the parking on the south side in front of the real estate office and the hair salon, this being Rena Street. Part of the plan that I didn't mention, but I do want to mention now, is that we create a turn pocket at Rena Street. And as soon as my computer catches up with me, I can show you that. I'll show you on the second slide. Let's go to the section where we're option B. If I can get that to come up on the screen. I don't think it's going to cooperate. Let's go back to the...
Did you get your license renewed?
Yes, I did. let's go to the next slide. The town hall meeting, we did have a town hall meeting where we invited all of the business owners and residents on Grand to come down and look at the proposals that we had. Most of them, in fact, all of them were in favor of the center turn lane. They saw that as a big benefit to the new plan. There was some concerns with the removal of on-street parking for businesses that was raised. They also raised a concern about possible increase in speeds if the parking was removed, creating a bigger, wider area tends to promote people safely trying to go faster. And also there was a concern about improving the exit and entering of parking if the parking was eliminated next to the driveway at 717 East Grand. That's down towards Rena. So that concludes my presentation. Mr. Mayor, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I think the recommendation this evening is that you... that the Traffic Commission is recommending that the Council approve option A for the proposed striping revisions on East Grand for the center left turn lane. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I have one quick question, Don. With the center turn lane going in, if either way, with either option, if we decided on bike lanes or we decided to maintain the parking, would it affect the width of the driving lanes?
Yes, the driving lanes become a little narrower. They could become 11-foot lanes. And we're also using the smallest or minimum center turn lane that we can possibly use, which is 10 feet. So, yes, the lanes get us a little bit narrower by a foot or so.
Okay, so let me understand it again. Mm-hmm. If we went with the bike lanes, how wide would the driving lanes be?
Most of them would be 11 feet.
And if we went with parking?
They're 11 feet as well.
Okay.
There's a section on... Steve, you want to go say something? There's a section, and I wish I could pull up there are proposed cross sections in the in your staff report. Some of the lanes on the side become a little larger because of the additional space there. But basically, there's 11-foot lanes in most of the sections that we have proposed for both of the options.
Okay. Any other questions, clarifications of the staff report?
They have that, right?
Mayor Pro Tem?
It's in the staff report.
So this is a question that I talked to Steve about, and he was going to check on it today. Because I'm looking for kind of the tiebreaker right now in my mind. The police, did they have any preference in their mind as far as safety, whether or not it was safer to not have the cars on the street or not?
I did follow up on the question with the acting police chief, and they first of all, they did not see any significant public safety hazards presented by either options. They did see some pros and cons of both options. So generally, they did not have any specific problem with either of the and are not instantly facing a vehicle coming by. On the other option, the parking was placed on one side. So on the other side of the street, the vehicles travel right up against the curb. And so, you know, once again, it wasn't a huge issue to them. They don't, you know, feel that either option provides an unsafe situation. But they did see some benefit from trying to prevent situations where the vehicle lane goes right up against the curb and sidewalk portion.
Thank you.
So hopefully that helps a little bit.
Okay. Let me ask one last question, Don, and before we have some public comment. If we were to... Hypothetically, if we were to go ahead and put in the center turn lane and we were to put in safe driving lanes, that's our objective. That's our main objective, right, is that center turn lane. If we were to do that and then take a look and see the flow of things, and I realize that we'd have to come back out, make a determination at that point, given the uniqueness of Grand Avenue in certain areas, that whole circulation segment. But watch it, see how it goes. Look at the flow of traffic. Look at proximity to curbs. Look at the relationship between traffic on Grand Avenue with that center turn lane and driveways in and out. Then make a determination, would it be safer to maintain the on-street parking, or based on what we see, could we then stripe a bike lane? Is that feasible at all?
I think what would happen is we would have to take out the shifting of the lanes. So if you're saying that if we went out, put in the center turn lane and left Orange Street parking as it is or whatever we can at this point, and then later wanted to come back and say, okay, let's put the bike lanes in, then there'd be certain blocks where the lanes had shifted to create parking, which would have to now shift back to create an even amount of bike lane on either side.
I see.
If you,
okay.
I was going to say kind of the easy way, I think, to visualize.
Business items, particularly items that have obviously an interest to the majority of our public along Grand Avenue. So if anyone would like to come forward, we would invite you to do so. Please, please try and limit your comments to 3 minutes and address the council as a whole. Anyone like to come forward on this item? If you would please state your name for the record.
My name is Evan Larson, and I live at 309 La Pointe Street. On April 24th of this year, City Council adopted our strategic 10-year plan, providing a vision for our future. And this plan encompasses specific long-range strategies, goals, and efforts. I'd like to read you a portion of a strategic direction from this plan. improvements shall be planned to facilitate and balance multimodal transportation, including motor vehicle, pedestrian, and bicycle transit. The key word here is balance. There are currently no bikeway facilities along East Grand between Halcyon and El Camino. Therefore, transportation modes are not balanced as the strategic plan calls for. A tactical goal of the strategic plan has been established to install a minimum of 5 new bike lanes to provide an effective citywide bikeway network consistent with the city's bikeway plan. From what I believe is the number one priority in the bikeway plan is this section of the roadway on East Grand between the ends of the project limits for the overlay and restriping. And in closing, I hope you do not approve option A, as it does not follow the adopted strategic plan and bike plan. Option B at least provides a step towards finding a balance between various transportation facilities. And I would actually prefer if the item is removed from consideration tonight and more public input is sought. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Good evening, members of council, honorable mayor. My name is Adam Fukushima, and I'm with the Slo County Bicycle Coalition. I'd like to respectfully ask for your support for bike lanes on this section of East Grand Avenue. It's not perfect. It doesn't have bike lanes on all of it, but we think it's a good start. This corridor is the gateway to downtown. The downtown area is a wonderful place for walking and biking, but that is if you can get there. Many residents west of the freeway do not feel... Now, I understand that the proposed center turn lane is intended to reduce rear collisions, and I'd like to ask whether the collisions are due to left-hand turns or right-hand turns. I'm not advocating we get rid of the center turn lane, but it would help in understanding what the problems are and knowing how to what the solution is. And thanks for your time. This issue has not only to do with those who live in the corridor, but also those who must go through the corridor or are served by the corridor. We're all stakeholders in East Grand Avenue. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward on this item?
I have some pictures I'd like to give you. My name is Fred Pope, and I'm one of the owners of 715 and 717 East Grand Avenue. I'm actually a property owner who wants the parking in front of his building removed. The first picture you have is an accident that occurred yesterday in that corridor. It's a rear-end accident. Second picture is exiting my parking lot with cars parked along Grand Avenue. As you can see, there's a large area that you just can't see. Third picture is that same area without parking. It's a lot safer. Fourth picture is a building I'm sure you're going to hear about shortly that's at the corner of Rain and Grand that doesn't have any off-street parking, and they're the building that's most affected by losing the parking. You're choosing between two options tonight. Option A allows for on-street parking in front of my building and the building next door. With the turning lanes installed and the traffic lanes smaller, exiting a parked car in that area will be more dangerous than it already is. Those lanes will be scrunched together. This parking obstructs the views of vehicles exiting my parking lot driveway and makes it dangerous to make either a right-hand or a left-hand turn out of my parking lot. Eliminating this parking ensures a view corridor. Sooner or later, parking along that area of Grand Avenue will vote for option B tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
I want to hand over this petition supporting option B that I collected riding around East Grand Avenue.
Good evening,
Mayor, City Council, and staff. My name is Ted Ackland. I live in 1222 Brighton Avenue in Roy Gandhi. For your information, only 85 people that signed that petition expressed support for putting bike lane on East Grand Avenue. They feel that every time they want to make a turn on either side of that East Grand Avenue is a challenge, and it's like you're risking your life just to making turns on East Grand Avenue. They all feel that it by removing parking and allowing bike lane, they will be able to see better and of course increase the safety of both motorists, pedestrians, and cyclists alike. Okay. New plan that doesn't include bike lane is like telling the public that bicycle commuting is not welcome in Arroyo Grande. That's what, how I feel. And I'm also here to appeal to your good conscience to adopt the priority one of the new bicycle plan, that's including bike lane on East Grand Avenue. So without you adopting the bicycle plan, it's just like a piece of paper, just making like the things just a piece of paper and making it look like it's just wishful thinking. So please adopt option B, which is safer for everyone.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Good evening, Mayor, City Council members, staff. My name is Tom Gerard. I have an opposing view. I have a business at 723 East Grand Avenue. I've heard all the arguments. I've rarely ever seen any bicyclists up and down Grand Avenue. I have witnessed accidents. I believe that's the purpose of the left-hand turn lane, is to alleviate the accidents. The other thing to consider is that, you know, it's a business district. It's not a scenic route. There's plenty of beautiful scenic routes to ride bikes on. I ride a bike, but I would not ride down Grand Avenue. If you look up and down the east portion of Grand Avenue, there's a lot of vacant buildings because it hasn't been really friendly to businesses. I have a business there. I have a letter from the Gallinones, the business next door, where she's been there for 10 years. She would lose her business if she lost her parking in front. There is no off-street parking in a location that I have. The side street is basically parked by the people from the 7-Eleven store across the street. The employees normally park there. So there's not adequate parking on the side streets. If you take out the parking in front, there's no need to be doing business over there. As far as the bicyclists riding up and down Grand Avenue, there's all storefronts on Grand Avenue with aprons, ingress, egress aprons, that there's constantly cars coming in and out of. So for that to be a safe spot for bicyclists to transverse doesn't seem to make much sense. Again, there's beautiful places to ride bikes all over San Luis Obispo County. Grand Avenue is one of them. If we do, I support option A. It makes sense. The left-hand turn lane would alleviate the accidents that have happened. I have all glass in front of my building. I've seen what goes on. I also believe that if you do take away the parking, the speeds will increase because there's nothing to slow the traffic down. I used to live in San Diego. There's two streets that run from the I-5 to the beach. One is Grand Avenue, ironically. The other is Garnett Avenue. Both of them have on-street parking. There are no bike lanes on those streets. There's plenty of beautiful places to ride bikes on in San Diego as well, but not in a business district. So I do also have a letter from Jessica Bolsero, who owns the salon next door to mine. And if it's okay with you guys, I'd like to read it. She can't be here. She's not in the state right now.
Well, if you make it quick.
It real quick. She just basically is saying she's a sole proprietor. She's been there for 10 years. She has a lot of elderly clients, and, you know, in a nutshell, if she loses the parking in front of her salon, she'll lose her business. So she's been there for 10 years. She's been doing business there for 10 years, and that's basically it. So I support option A, which is what Public Works has proposed, as well as Jessica. I don't know if you guys want a copy of her letter or not.
Give it to staff, and we'll...
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll get copies then. Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm Ron Gould. I'm one of the owners of the building that this gentleman was just talking about. And, you know, earlier this evening, you're talking about the birthday of Royal Grandy. It's quite an old city, and we've got a little problem. You know, those businesses were put in many years ago before we considered bike lanes, and now we've got a problem because if we can't have any off-street parking, those businesses are just going to cease to exist. If you know the law office across the street, he's got a big sign up there. He's been trying to rent it for over a year, but he's got no parking in back, and he has, I think, maybe one space in front, and nobody wants to rent that office building. If you do away with all of the off-street parking on this particular business and several others, I just don't think they can exist. So I think, sure, it would be nice if we could have nice wide bike lanes, and if the city were being planned today, that's what we would do. But it's an old city, and we have to accommodate people. And so we're just asking that you accommodate the businesses by not taking away our parking. Thank you for your consideration. I'm for option A, of course.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to come forward?
Mayor and City Council, I'm Kenneth Price, live at 554 Sombrio, and I support option B. One of the reasons that we moved from Southern California to Rio Grande, because when we moved up here and looked around, we found what a wonderful place to live, and also a very bike-friendly area. And I think that if you don't go through this plan, be it not perfect, then it's telling the bike people and the alternate forms of transportation people that maybe this isn't as bike-friendly as we'd like to think it is. I think that, you know, there's a big message here, because as gasoline goes up, I mean, you have more people going into alternate forms of transportation, this may become more viable form of transportation for more people. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else?
My name's Warren Hockenberry. I live at 545 Sombrio in Arroyo Grande. I'm advocating B as a bicyclist. I find Grand Avenue, especially in the east part, very dangerous to ride on. I wasn't aware of the parking spaces that were going to be lost if we have bike lanes. However, one business owner who is speaking saying he doesn't need the three in front of his, I don't quite understand how nine other parking spaces, some on the north, some on the south, are going to jeopardize all the businesses that were mentioned here today. It seems like a very small number of spaces that these people are depending on for their livelihood, but I don't know that much about it. I just know that riding on East Grand into the village or out of the village is a very dangerous situation once you cross the freeway. And any place that we can have additional bike lanes added to our highways is a real benefit to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Last chance. Okay, going once, going twice. We'll close public comment on 11B, and we'll bring this back to the council. Let's see, Councilmember Guthrie, why don't you start us off here?
Well, let me start. I think there are a number of issues here. Let me start out with talking about the bike lanes. I'm certainly always been and continue to be a supporter of bike lanes wherever we can put it. But I do want to point out that this is a particularly key piece of our circulation element for the bicycle plan, in that it connects. Without this, there is no reasonable connection between the west side and the east side. Yes, it's a main business corridor, but that's also, I think we have to stop thinking of bicycling as just a purely recreational sport, that in fact it is a means of transportation, and if we want people to use this means of transportation rather than cars, then I think we have to provide the infrastructure to support that. If you think about how else you're going to get – well, the other key element here that I want to point out is that this connects – because the junior high school is here in the village, that if we're looking particularly for junior high schoolers to ride to school from the other side of the freeway, this is the key path to ask them to either go all the way around to Fair Oaks or I suppose you could go through Briscoe. I've done it once. I don't recommend it. But at any rate, that this is the key path. So from a bicycle standpoint, I think just purely on the bike lanes, I would support this just to support biking in our community and also to follow through on the circulation plan that we put together. I'll add to that if, in fact, there's direction from council that we shouldn't put in these bike lanes, then we really do need to redo that circulation element. And the suggestion that Cornwall is the alternative path is just unacceptable. I mean, it requires two left turns across Grand, another left turn onto Grand in order to complete that. So if, in fact, this isn't the direction that the other councilors think we should go, then we have to come up with an alternative plan, and that's not a workable one. When I look at this, I mean, this is the classic, you know, parking is part of the auto versus the bike. Are we going to save? Really, it comes down to these three or four spaces. When I first looked at this, I said, well, this is a very difficult situation for this property owner that, in fact, they don't have any on-site parking. But when you look around, the other property owners do have on-site parking. And as pointed out, the Pope Realty next door has developed a very extensive parking lot at significant expense, redevelop that whole property, and the ability to enter and exit that property is severely affected by the parking on the street. So independent of the bike lanes, the opening up to make this street safer for even automobiles to enter and exit, let alone bicycles enter and exit, I think that the parking should go away anyway. I will say then I'm probably the only person who has some hesitation about the center lane. I mean, I know there's a lot of rear-end accidents here. There's a lot of rear-end accidents because there's a lot of left-turn activity across these streets, particularly with the gas station. I don't think that was the accident we were shown. I think that's before the gas station. But what essentially we have here is not a series of driveways. We have a whole block. When you take the gas station and the small strip mall where the soccer market is, you have just one giant driveway where people are going to be making left turns and right turns in and out of that driveway all the way along. I'm actually concerned about the conflict. I know they don't like it when I call this the suicide lane, but that's what we've always called it, the center lanes where you have, in fact, head-on traffic where people are trying to align to make a turn either into that gas station or make one of the left turns on the other way. And it's I'm not quite sure it's going to be quite the solution that we think it is, but clearly we have to do something because this is, at least my understanding, the highest accident rate in the city happens in this particular section. I also point out that I do think the visibility factor is actually pretty key for vehicles traveling down this road as well. So I'm in favor of the bike lanes simply because their bike lanes are something we should be encouraging. And clearly, I'll add to that, if we always do what we've always done, which is favor the car, we'll always get what we always got, which is nobody riding bicycles. This isn't a particularly safe. I've ridden down here. It's not impossible, but it's certainly not a particularly safe place to ride a bicycle, and we should be improving that. So I'm in favor of option B. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I must admit that I'm a little bit torn on this issue, but I go back to the same subjects that Jim Guthrie was just talking about. And one is the use of bicycles as a principle that we're trying to encourage. And I do think that's something we ought to be doing. I pretty much look at this as a balance issue in terms of bicycles on one side and parking on the other. I certainly don't want to make it harder for businesses to continue to exist. But I think that the issues in terms of bicycle users, bicycle safety, and view safety, the view corridors, for having the bike lanes speak very strongly for themselves and do outweigh the loss of a couple of spaces. One thing I would do is recommend that staff work with the property owner to see what kind of assistance we can provide in terms of making more spaces available on the side street, maybe working with the 7-Eleven strip to try and encourage them to have their employees not park over there, so we will keep some spaces available. Let's do what we can to help this business owner out, but I can support B.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I actually, I'll go to the punchline first, and then I'll go to my reasons why. I'm going to support B as well. The reasons being, we've been talking a lot about healthy communities, smart growth. We have our strategic plan and for the bikes and everything. And I can't see how we're going to continue to talk about these items and then not actually support them when we have an opportunity to. And I don't casually dismiss the concerns of the business community at all. I think I've been a pretty strong supporter to encourage wherever we can. And I think I would agree completely with Councilman Costello that if we can do anything to help these businesses to try to, you know, whether it put a very short-term parking, maybe 1 hour on the side streets or something, so that we don't have employees parking there, but that we leave it open for customers. But I think this is a great opportunity to do a major piece of the bike circulation plan. Obviously, the community is supporting this. There's no doubt about it. The number of in the petition, I looked through to see where the addresses were, and this was not a case of he canvassed one neighborhood. No, he was everywhere. And there's a lot of support. The amount of people that came out tonight to speak in favor of it. But the probably, as I called it when I first started talking a little bit, was the tiebreaker, which I asked the city manager to look into, was the safety issue. And I think the fact that we were talking about pushing traffic right up against the sidewalk on one side, definitely I think that would actually make those who are walking on the sidewalk even feel that much less secure. I think these photos... They say it perfectly. There's just no doubt about it. We've all been there whether it's beyond right here in the village or anywhere else, where you're trying to pull out and there's either a large van parked there or even a mid-sized car if you're in a smaller vehicle. And it's very difficult to pull out. You almost have to just gas and go and hope. And so I think there are so many reasons why these big bike lanes make sense. And so I absolutely have no problem supporting it tonight. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. You know, it's interesting. Several of you mentioned balance, and yeah, we have doctrine on both sides. Actually, we have our circulation plan and our bike plan, and then we also have our economic element, which says that we need to do whatever we can to support our businesses, to include wherever possible, ensuring adequate parking. Well, one thing happened since I've retired, and I have a little more time to get from point A to point B. I've been actually riding my bicycle more frequently from Cortland into the village, and I can tell you, even without the center turn lane right now, it's a harrowing experience for two reasons. The parking on the street, even without the bike lane marked and plenty of room. I found myself going along at a comfortable pace, and then all of a sudden, in a relatively short period of time, there was a car door that opened up in front of me. And fortunately, I was able to pull in behind that car and struck the curb, but not a lot of damage done, but there could have been. So the street with the side parking, the parking along the side is in fact hazardous, I think, to bicycles. On the issue of parking, I think that there's an option here for us to look at individual businesses who might have some unique problems, the salon that you mentioned. Maybe there's a way of incorporating in some of those sensitive areas or some of those problem areas where we can do a passenger loading and unloading, particularly for elderly folks, so that it's a temporary thing. The slide that you showed, Don, option A, center turn lane with parking on north and south sides, I think one of the slides that you showed had listed as a pro that it would be signed as a bike route. I don't see that as a positive. I see it as a negative. And again, I kind of concur. If we're balancing between our economic element and our bike plan and trying to find the tiebreaker, if you will, it does have to come back to the safety issue. I would, for one, if we had parking through that area and a center turn lane with a street configuration that we would be left with, I would just assume we took out the bike route signs and not encourage people to do that, because I think it's a tragic accident waiting to happen. As it stands right now, with on-street parking along Grand Avenue and a center turn lane, I think what we're doing is we're sort of compelling the bicycle traffic to move onto the sidewalk, which is obviously not the safest place, but in its current configuration, it's safer than the street. That's what I've been doing, to be honest with you, is riding on the sidewalk, and then, of course, a whole different set of circumstances arise when you approach a driveway, and you've got to negotiate that. But I'd much rather ride slower and negotiate a driveway than I would to be forced into the number two driving lane and having to anticipate a car door opening up in front of me. So from the safety aspect, I think option B certainly is the more prudent approach. With that, I'm going to join my colleagues. I think if we and support option B, I think if we once again see if there's some way that we can come up with some kind of a parking strategy, maybe a timed parking on some of the side streets, look at passenger loading zones in front of those businesses that that are sort of landlocked and don't have off-street parking, then that might assist the situation. But in my mind, the safety issue here clearly is looming large with option A. So I can support B as well. Any other discussion? Okay, if not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I propose that the City Council adopt the center turn, left turn lane on East Grand Avenue between Halcyon Road and El Camino, and adopt option B, which calls for the bike lanes on the same section of the road.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, thank you. All right, that takes us to item 12, City Council Member Items. We have none listed this evening. I guess I better wait for Councilmember Fellows.
Keep going.
We're waiting on you, Chuck. Okay, that takes us to item 12, City Council Member Items. We have none listed. Item 13, City Manager Items. Anything tonight, Steve? Any council communication?
I have just two little things I'd like to share real quick with the community. As everyone knows, I think that I was on vacation for the last 3 weeks, and I actually had an opportunity to run an RV trailer, which was a first for me. And coming down from San Jose, the trailer's brakes failed. And that was not what I wanted to see the trip start off. Anyways, I took the trailer into a Heacock Welding. They squeezed me in. They got on it right away, and they actually fixed it right away. And I was very impressed with their professionalism and everything, and so I want to recognize them for their hard work and say thank you. And then another vendor in our town, Ira's Bike Shop. I actually have two old bikes that my wife and I don't ride after bike ride. No, maybe I will. But anyways, we were taking our bikes on the trip. I took them into Ira's to ask him to tune them up to or possibly sell me two new bikes. And Ira's basically said, see if you use the bikes first before you go buy two new bikes. So basically what I want to do is just say thanks to these two merchants in town, because they basically made my trip very enjoyable, and it just shows that you really can get a nice product in town here. So thank you.
Okay, good. Any other council communication? If not, I have one.
Mr. Mayor, I was just hesitating coming in. I talked to Mr. Pope, who was one of the speakers for removing the three parking spaces in front of his unit there. He manages also the 7-Eleven store, and so he's going to try to work out something to solve the problem that you suggested solving.
Well, good. That's helpful. Any other council communication? Okay, just a quickie here. I want to hear some extra for staff. I attended a mayor's meeting last Friday, Paso Robles hosted, and our grassroots representative, Dave Mullinax from the League of Cities, actually had this two-page document. And as you can see, the focus is transient occupancy tax that has been kind of craftily eliminated from online reservations, and the city of Los Angeles is losing a tremendous amount of money, and they've put together a class action lawsuit against several of the online travel sites. And I didn't think about this until recently, when I made a couple of reservations myself online and actually got to the hotel in another city and got ready to check out, and found out that what I got was a receipt that said prepaid, and there was nothing itemized on it. There was no local tourist tax. There was no transient occupancy tax. There was nothing on this other than on the receipt other than a note that said prepaid, balance zero, period. So clearly this is happening. When you see the advertisements that one site has four-star hotels at a two-star price, I tend to think this is probably part of the strategy. We don't know yet what the outcome of this lawsuit is going to be, but if the city of LA does not prevail, what we talked about at the mayor's meeting is perhaps organizing it through the league on a county-by-county basis and seeing if we can't take another look at this. But this is clearly an issue and could be an issue, particularly with our hotels coming online. So anyhow, it's something to think about. And again, Tim, what we talked about here was kind of a class action countywide with all the seven cities pooling together. Everybody seemed reasonably supportive of that. Okay. Any staff communications?
No, sir.
All right. So our last community comments and suggestions. Are you part of the community or?
Yes, but thank you.
Oh, okay. That'll take us to item 17, which is adjournment.
Salute.
Thank you.